College holds a mythic place in American culture. On the new Campus Files podcast, we uncover the scandals you won't hear on the campus tours. Find Campus Files on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
It is 12:07. You are listening to The Shaletta Show on News Talk 830 WCCO Radio, your good neighbor station. It was not a good night in Minneapolis. We're going to get right to it because there was gunfire early Saturday in downtown Minneapolis. Two people died, three wounded. One of at least three shootings after midnight that injured people across the city. And we know that Minneapolis Police Chief Brian O'Hare has been working so hard to keep our city safe, recruit more diverse officers. And this is a big blow, a big setback. And how are we going to move from here, keeping our community safe? I am so grateful that he is joining me courtesy of the John Schuster Caldwell Banker Hotline. He is on the Shaletta Show right now after a long night and a lot of work. Chief, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you so much, Ms. Shaletta.
What's the latest that we know about these shootings and these deaths? Let's start there.
Well, I'll tell you, it's not just been a long night. It's been a long week. It's been a long few weeks. We've just had a lot of tragedy, a lot of number of different incidents that have happened, shootings, homicides. We've had, a spike of violence around encampments. But I tell you, what is most troubling to me about last night is just that, again, we're seeing teenagers that are out there late at night at bar close. And, I mean, maybe it's just the parent in me, but, kids, young teens, absolutely do not belong downtown at 2 o'clock in the morning, in the middle of the chaos that happens when, hundreds and hundreds of people are leaving bars intoxicated. And yet again, we had another tragedy last night. It's just all of it has just been too much for everyone in the community.
And I was just at lunch yesterday with my friend Karen, and that's the thing we were talking about. We have children. We have teenage children. We were talking about the curfews and how, the city shouldn't have to impose a curfew. You know that you have a teenage child. They need to be accounted for at a certain time. It makes your job more difficult, and you can't parent our kids. That's our job. That's what we're supposed to be doing. Does Minneapolis have a curfew?
Minneapolis does have a curfew, but really curfew is, probably the most minor of any possible offense we can. And frankly, when officers do take teenagers, down to the youth center for violation of curfew, there's issues with it. One, it takes cops off the street, particularly downtown at a time we know bar close. Everyone that we possibly can out there to try and keep people safe. And two, the officers a lot of times see the kids immediately returning after they bring them down there. So it doesn't seem particularly useful the way it is set up. But this is really, really troubling. Again, this same intersection late at night, these teenagers being down there and having real serious injuries. So we've been talking with a number of our community-based partners. 21 Days of Peace has been down there with us. We're asking some other groups, Mad Dads and some other groups, to come out there with us and help us with this issue. And frankly, I'm not convinced that, all of the businesses down there are on the up and up. There has got to be a reason why these teenagers keep coming down there late at night. And we need to look a little bit harder at, who is letting these, are any of these businesses profiting off of what's going on down there and allowing kids in when they shouldn't be. And that's something we're going to start looking at closer tonight.
And, speaking of tonight, we know there's been a shortage of Minneapolis police officers. How do you plan to beef up the patrols in that particular area? Are you looking at incorporating some different departments?
Yes. Well, we have been, until very recently, we have been successful over the last 2 years at limiting the amount of gun violence that happens at bar close. It's not like it was in 2020 and 2021 and even beginning of 22. But we've had a spike down there, so we're going to continue the late night safety plan that we have, but we're going to add additional officers. We're going to try and pull some officers off of different details from Arrest City, particularly right at bar close, just to add to the presence. I'm going to add the horses, the mounted patrols, back to bar close. Even just having one officer on a horse sitting, 10 feet in the air can see a whole lot better. What's going on in a crowd, particularly when we have what happened last night. There were fights breaking out last night, and there was confusion even from, our partners that monitor cameras down here, the cops that are on the sidewalk trying to figure out what's going on there, and then all of a sudden, gunfire happens, and we have this tragedy. So we're doing that. We're adding some additional violence interrupters, community-based partners. We're asking them to come out and help us. And the sheriff has also committed to send some sheriff's officers down there from bar close to help us as well.
Now, we just did stories just a month or so ago, maybe 2 months, about, the violence, a crime going down, car thefts going down. Again, you've been working with these community partners, bridging that gap, building that trust in the community with the Minneapolis Police Department, doing an excellent job after everything that we've gone through before you got here to make sure that we are all working together and we have a common goal, which is to keep our city safe. But it must be frustrating for you and your officers. How do you keep them going? Because they have to be, and you have to be getting discouraged after all the efforts you've made to try to turn this thing around.
Yeah, well, we are fortunate. Our officers are working extremely hard. And I would say the morale, and as hard as they work, even with fewer officers today than it was 2 years ago when I first got here, they're working even harder than they were 2 years ago. And they're continuing to do it. The reality is, what enables all these shootings to happen is all these guns on the street. That's the problem. And they're everywhere. And, sure enough, after a certain point downtown, we've seen it over the last few years. Even if there aren't guns coming into these clubs, too many people have guns in their cars. They get drunk. There's some minor beef or some other utter nonsense. Too many people are willing to go get a gun and settle some foolishness. That's the real issue, is the amount of guns on the street. And we have been working with all of law enforcement, federal, state, county, and others, and we have been removing record numbers of guns off the street the last few years. But the problem is there's just way too many.
Well, I know you have to go. I appreciate you stopping by. Thank you for the efforts of you and your officers to try and do your best to keep our city safe. As parents, I hope that folks are hearing you on this show and that we do our part to keep our kids in the house at 2 o'clock in the morning. There's nothing out there for a 16-year-old at 2 o'clock in the morning except trouble. And we don't need any more of that in our city. Chief Brian O'Hare, thank you so much for being on the Shaletta Show. God bless you.
Thank you so much, Ms. Shaletta. We appreciate you.
All right. You all stick around. We've got more to come. It is 12:19, and I have to say thank you again for the Minneapolis Police Chief Brian O'Hara coming on the Shaletta Show to talk about the shootings and killings that happened overnight in our city and what he is doing to try to keep everyone safe. We're going to switch gears here. I had to call my friend Brian McDaniel from Hilden Advocacy and Law Almanac, a political analyst. You also see him on At Issue with Tom Hauser and any number of places talking politics. You weren't on Almanac last night, but you were on Almanac last night. Did anybody tell you that I put your picture in my monologue?
They did not. They did
what?
Not. Well, I always watch. I always watch, even when I'm not on. But I have it on the recorder, whatever they're calling it these days. So I will be able to see it. This
week. You put it on the VHS tape. You recorded it on your Betamax. You got it on the Betamax.
yeah. You got me figured out.
Well, I'm not gonna tell you what I did, but I had your big old giant head in my monologue last night. So that ought to scare you enough. That ought to scare you enough that you were on Almanac last night in my monologue. So no spoilers. I'm going to let you go home when you finish with this interview and watch it.
Giddy up. All right.
Now, what is going on with this political stuff? It is so much. We can go national. We can go local. I'll start with, I just saw that Kamala Harris says that she will do a debate on CNN in October, and they're waiting on Trump. Do you think he is going to get back on the stage after that butt whooping he got the last time?
Well, I would, here's the thing. If I were advising former President Trump, and let me be crystal clear, I am not. But if I were advising President Trump, I would not debate again. There's really nothing to be gained by it from him. You know, I don't know that there's a ton to lose either, because I think that Republicans are voting one way, Democrats are voting another, and independents are either, you know, not paying attention or are dreading having to vote for either one of them. But it's smart for her, for Kamala, to kind of like make it so Donald Trump, you know, looks like the obstructionist, and he's not going to listen to anybody. So if his political people are telling him, stay away from the debate, that might make him want to do it more, just because that's the kind of person he is.
Yeah. You know, do you really think anybody is making a decision based on what happens in a debate, Brian? I mean, I just think that everybody has their heels dug in, and the few folks who are undecided are going to make a decision based on what they've already seen so far. What do you think?
For sure. I mean, there isn't anybody who hasn't made up their mind on Donald Trump one way or the other. There's not anybody who's going to say, all right, one more felony and then I'm out. I mean, that's just not how it's going to go. People either decided that, you know, he is reprehensible and you cannot vote for him, or that he's either a breath of fresh air or the lesser of two evils. Now, I think that there are lots of independent people out there, but I don't think that they are sitting down to watch these horrible debates between, you know, not great candidates, whether it's Biden or Kamala or Trump. So I think all it's doing is giving those of us in the political class something to shout about on Twitter. That's all these debates.
And, you know, one of the things that Chad Hartman and I talked about when I was on his show a few weeks back is the role of traditional media in today's political climate. Candidates can go and talk to an influencer or someone on TikTok and get millions of views and hits and likes versus, you know, going to sit down with, you know, a major network and getting grilled about something and having a gotcha moment and that getting just a fraction of the hits and likes and views that they get from a popular influencer on Instagram or any of the other social media sites. And I believe, Brian, that, you know, in the media, as traditional media, we really have to change up the way we do things, because these politicians really don't need us anymore. They can get the word out through their own social media channels or the influence that they've hand selected. And they always come out looking rosy because they don't have those tough, difficult questions to answer.
Well, and, you know, and we can certainly argue about, you know, why we got to this point. But I agree with you, you know, 100%. I mean, it used to be that there were trusted people, you know, in the media that the voters used to say, well, I want to see who the Star Tribune endorses, or I want to see that the interview that so and so is going to do on 60 Minutes or whatever it might be. And these days, I think that, you know, once, you know, CNN and MSNBC and Fox, once they kind of devoted themselves to being just political entertainment, mm-hmm. I think that, you know, that meant that the only people watching them are the far right or far left. They're looking to either get outraged by something or kind of have their biases already, you know, confirmed. And, you know, it's so funny that this comes up, because this morning, for whatever reason, I was thinking about the old HBO show The Wire. You probably remember that.
Yes.
And in it, if you remember, you know, part of the storyline was who's running for mayor and all of that. And it was important, and I don't know what made me think of this, but it was important in the show and, you know, in real life to, like, get the endorsement of the pastors, or to have this group endorse you, or this group, or this union, or whatever it might be. And it's really not that way anymore. And it goes, it's the same thing with traditional media where, you know, it's the online circus that people are exposed to. And, you know, they're not looking to their elders or, you know, people who have more experience or the people that came before them, because I think young people see all of us as we're the ones who messed it up.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a whole different ballgame. It's a whole different animal. And anybody who does not want to recognize that there's a shift and the tide is turning should look at the DNC. I read so many national stories, Brian, from people reporters who said there was a power struggle between traditional reporters and influencers. Like, some of the influencers were getting more backstage passes and credentials than, you know, traditional political reporters who actually cover the White House. Because these people get more clicks, they get more hits, and the response is always going to be favorable, and that's what the candidates are looking for.
Well, and when you're a traditional journalist, and we can all argue about the ones we like, the ones we don't like, but I believe that, you know, with journalistic training becomes at least some adherence to journalistic ethics. And journalistic ethics make you check sources. Journalistic ethics, you know, make you just not run with a story because you get to be first when you don't have all of the facts. And while I don't know that I completely trust, you know, all members of traditional media, nobody does, nor should they, I do find comfort in, you know, when I go online or when I'm reading something, there are people, and this is a benefit that you and I have, is we know a lot of these reporters. So I know reporters who I trust. Doesn't mean that they have the same politics as me, but that doesn't matter, because when you trust somebody, you trust that they are putting their own biases as much as anyone can, you know, in the parking lot, and they don't want to get bad information and put bad information out into the political sphere. But if you're, you know, BrianMcDaniel.com or, you know, Shaletta.net, and you're just looking for as many clicks, well, then you're going to, if you hear that Congresswoman Omar is from Mars, I mean, you're just going to run with it, because it doesn't matter if it's true. It doesn't matter if the person who told you is, you know, off the rocker. It just matters that somebody's going to click on your site.
Right. And then also for us in traditional media, and I've got a foot in both non-traditional as well as traditional media. But, you know, credibility means everything. You know, I'm not going to go out here and say one of these crazy conspiracy theories, because then I'm not going to get Chief Brian O'Hare to stop what he's doing and come on my radio show. My boss is going to be on me. There's some accountability. But with the influencers, they can say whatever they want, and there's no accountability. They're not going to get fired. They don't have a boss. They're not going to get written up, and they can go back on and say whatever they want. You know, Facebook or Instagram or TikTok might suspend them for 30 days, and then they're right back in action doing whatever it is that they want to do, because there's no accountability. You don't have the journalistic ethics and integrity that go along with being a traditional media reporter.
And you know, these days we can find out so much more information about the people that we are, you know, hoping to vote for or hoping to vote against, that when you get into all this nonsense that gets put out there by influencers and some people in non-traditional media, it really does do us a disservice. I mean, Donald Trump, you know, as much maligned as his Twitter presence used to be, what an opportunity that was for a candidate to, you know, be able to speak to the American people unfiltered. Now, I think that obviously Donald Trump didn't use it in the most responsible manner, that's for sure. But, you know, it could have been like going back to Franklin Delano Roosevelt in the fireside chats, where he would speak directly to the American people. Well, Donald Trump, through Twitter, had that opportunity and went in the direction that I think it was lamentable. But, you know, it really did, you know, kind of cut out traditional media and make traditional media have to now compete with, you know, the guy down the street who has, you know, a blog that that isn't beholden to any journalistic standard.
Mm-hmm. We have to take a quick break, but I'm going to have you stick around because I assume that Ilhan Omar had one person that she was running against, and now there may be two. What is happening in that congressional district race? Brian McDaniels is going to explain that next. Make sure if you do not hear my interview with Minneapolis Police Chief Brian O'Hara, you check out the stream, the podcast. It is up and available. Go to WCCLradio.com. Look for The Shaletta Show, and it is there. You can also hear it on Apple and Spotify, wherever you get your podcast. His passion about keeping especially our teenagers safe and off the street, his plea for parents to keep their kids safe and in the home after curfew is something that you have to listen to and share with the people in your life. We are talking with my friend Brian McDaniel from Hilden Advocacy and Law. We are talking politics. You have probably seen him everywhere from Almanac to At Issue with Tom Hauser, a trusted political analyst here throughout the great state of Minnesota. Brian, thank you so much for spending some of your Saturday with me, sir.
You know, I'm always available for you.
I
come running.
I appreciate it. I really do. I really do. I don't just appreciate your being available to allow me to pick your brain and the expertise that you give us about the political happenings in our state as well as across the country. But I also appreciate your friendship and the love that you have given not only me, but my family. So thank you so much. I needed to say that. But I want to talk about what's going on with Ilhan Omar. She beat out Don Samuels, and now we're supposed to be going into the election. Early voting has started, and I read something, and I sent you the story. I'm like, what is going on? There's another candidate in the race. What the hell is happening?
Well, I mean, you know, because you know, traditionally what we're used to is, you know, a Republican, a Democrat, and then, you know, potentially, you know, any number of you know, third party groups. We were kind of going into this election with Omar, and it was going to, you know, her big challenge, of course, was the DFL primary with Don Samuels and other people, and she got through that, you know, probably even easier than most people were predicting. And then it was going to be, you know, on Omar versus you know, Dalia Al-Akhidi, the Republican, and mm-hmm. you know, the you know, 5th congressional district is overwhelmingly Democrat, so the Republican is not really a huge challenge, though it does send a message. But nothing's ever normal, right? Nothing's ever cut and dried.
Wow. And so do you think this person is going to present a challenge to her? Is this somebody that you know? Do you have any background information on who this is?
Yeah, I don't have a ton of info, and what it is you know the 2nd congressional district down by where I live in Dakota County is extraordinarily competitive. These other districts really aren't, at least not in you know, a real way. You know could the Democrat win the 8th congressional district? Potentially, but really the only seat that's really up for grabs is the Angie Craig seat down in CD2. I don't see anything other than I don't see anything derailing Congresswoman Omar, other than just kind of the almost near constant drama and intrigue that kind of just follows her everywhere, and now seems to be following, you know, her husband with some of his business dealings. But I think in the actual election, I don't think that a third party, a fourth party, or a fifth party will prevent her from winning.
Now, we talked a little bit about Angie Craig just now. That is the district that I am in. And right now we are being inundated with door knockers and commercials and flyers. You mentioned that it is competitive. What does she need to win, and what does her challenger need to take her spot?
Well, you know, a bunch of things have happened which have really changed things down here in the 2nd Congressional District. The 2nd Congressional District, you know, as long as I can remember, has always been extremely competitive. In the year 2000, you know, Mark Kennedy beat David Mingy by 155 votes. You know, out of almost, you know, 290,000 votes. So it's very competitive, and it will stay competitive. I think that Joe Biden dropping out of the race really does help Angie Craig, because, you know, he was leading to a lot of voter apathy on the Dem side. But also on the Republican side, Taylor Rahm was the endorsed Republican by the party, but then dropped out before the primary to go take a job with the Trump campaign. And Joe Tarab, who was actually who I was supporting, then kind of ascended to the top of the list. And he is a very strong candidate. He's a person of color. He's a child of immigrants, a federal prosecutor. So he has a lot going for him.
Right.
However, I think that Kamala Harris does definitely help. Craig. There's a third party candidate down here in the second congressional
right.
district, though, that absolutely could turn the tide against the Republican for sure.
It is a lot going on. You must be in hog heaven. But I got to ask you, do you have a prediction? You are looking at Harris Walz and Trump Vance. The polling is very close in some areas. There have been a lot of Republicans who have come out and said Dick and Liz Cheney and others who are, endorsing Harris, which is something that we have not seen done in a very long time. What's your overall feel for this presidential election? I remember, Brian, I was watching TV the night of the election when they were ready to call it for Hillary and go home. And those I saw one station, national, and the percentage had Hillary winning by about 82%. I remember seeing it. And as the night went on, those numbers flipped. And the next thing you know, the person, Donald Trump, that they had counted out was now the president of the United States of America. And so, you know, people want to say, oh, well, you know, the debate was bad and there's no way. And then now she's got Walz and everybody's excited and she's got the momentum. But you can't count Trump out. I've seen it happen before. We've all seen it happen before. If you had to predict now with everything that's going on right today, who do you think is going to come out on top?
Well, and you hit the nail on the head as far as what we have to be careful of. It feels right now like Kamala Harris and Tim Walz have all the momentum, and that Trump and Vance are constantly floundering, constantly, you know, fighting, you know, and talking about eating pets and all kinds of foolishness like this. It feels like that Harris and Walz are going to win, and they're going to win Minnesota for sure. And then adding Walz to the ticket will also help people like Angie Craig. So I mean, right now, if you make me have to predict, I predict that Harris and Walz will become president and vice president. But also, we have to remember, we're not in Pennsylvania. We're not in some of these swing states. The feeling we have here in Minnesota is just very different than what might be existing in Georgia, in Pennsylvania, in, you know, Arizona, Nevada, you know, some of these other states, and they matter. And unfortunately, sorry guys, Electoral College, we kind of don't matter anymore, which is why Walz has been such a help to her, almost attitudinally. But does he help in Pennsylvania? Because that's where she really does need the help. And Josh Shapiro, the governor there, might have hurt her some other places, but definitely would have helped her in Pennsylvania. And neither candidate can win without Pennsylvania.
Wow. So all eyes are on Pennsylvania. Now, where are you going to be the night of the election? Because I want to be able to get in touch with you. Where are you going to be? I hope you're going to be somewhere close on the phone where somebody can call you and get you on the radio or on a podcast or something. Where are you going to be?
Well, wherever I will be 100% available to you. I used to do a ton of election night radio. In fact, I was doing election night radio in 2016, where I was surprised with everybody else. Kind of sitting in a war room, looking at a bunch of different screens. That's kind of my election night jam now.
Well, all right. Well, I want to be the peanut butter and jelly on your jam. We'll be checking in with you, I'm sure, even before then. But Brian McDaniel with Hilden Advocacy and Law, thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much.
All right. You all stick around. We've got more to come. It is 12:52. You are listening to The Shaletta Show on News Talk 830 WCCO Radio, your good neighbor station. Beautiful blue skies out here in Cottage Grove at the basement studio. Josh Wheeler is at the historic WCCO Radio studio, making sure our guests get on and off of the John Schuster Caldwell Banker hotline. And Al Schock is in the newsroom, bringing us the latest on news, weather, and information to help us make the best decisions that we need to make for our day, for our families, for our community. And speaking of our community, I had a big community event at the Minneapolis Club last month, maybe a couple of months ago now, where I invited hundreds of black business owners to the club to take tours, to network, to connect. And I was so impressed when I met Derek Francis. He has a film that has been selected for the Twin Cities Film Festival next month. The announcement was just made a couple of weeks ago. And I was like, Derek, you got to come on my radio show and talk about it. It's all about integration. And so I am so excited and delighted that we finally found some time on Derek's calendar. And he is joining us now. Hey, Derek.
Hey, Shalana, thank you so much for the opportunity. Thanks for the invite and thanks for the event. It was great. And I'm so thankful to be on the show today. Thank you.
Now, talk to me about your movie, Separate But Not Equal, Minnesota's Integration Story.
Yeah, I'll share. This year, 2024, this makes it 70 years since 1954's Brown versus Board of Education decision, which deemed it illegal to have separate schools based on race. So that was 70 years ago this school year. And mm-hmm. so just knowing that throughout the country, schools began to desegregate and began integrating. And so schools throughout the country, like Topeka, Kansas, you'll be familiar with, Little Rock 9, those you hear about. But then Minnesota has its own integration story, which came in 1971. And so the documentary shares about what did it look like here in Minnesota to have to integrate schools? Because I know most people are like, no, we didn't have to do that in Minnesota, but we definitely did. And so the documentary shares about Hale and Field, the pairing that occurred in 1971. Hale was 99% white at the time of the pairing, and Field was predominantly African-American and students of color, around 70%. And so what makes Minnesota's pairing unique is that the schools both integrated, whereas schools around the country would have the black schools shut down and the students would go over to the white school. So we're excited to share Minnesota's story, Minnesota's history. And I know that's something I didn't grow up learning about when I was in elementary, middle, high school, grad school. And so we're excited to have a film to unpack that for us here in Minnesota.
Now, where can people see this film? Because I know they are going to want to see this. They're going to want to know and understand more about our state's history when it comes to integrating schools.
Yes. And so the film will be in the it's been selected for the Twin Cities Film Festival. And that film festival begins next month on October 17th. The film will be airing, premiering on October 18th at 2 p.m. And it's at the St. Louis Park Marcus Theater, the theater right in the area over there. And so 2 o'clock is the debut of the film. And so we'd love to have folks come out and learn a little bit about our state's integration story.
Now, where can folks get tickets? Is it free? Do they have to purchase tickets? And give us a website where they can go and sign up.
Yes. It's, so tickets are now available and will continue to be available on the Twin Cities Film Fest website. So it's TwinCitiesFilmFest.com. You can go get tickets there. And so your tickets will also have before and after opportunities to meet. And so the documentary actually shares lived, real accounts from people who were a part of the pairing. And so you'll be able to see them in the film, but then also they'll be available before and after for question and answers. And so that all takes place on October 18th. And tickets are at TwinCitiesFilmFest.com.
Well, I just thank you so much for being on the show, for sharing this story with me, and for bringing this documentary to light so that we can enlighten people about the history of Minnesota and our challenges and celebrations when it comes to integrating schools. Derek Francis, thank you so much for being on the Shaletta Show.
No problem. Thank you for having me. I appreciate it a lot.
And you all stick around. Don't go anywhere. We've got more coming up. But I have to let Charlotte and Kylie know that this show is going to be done at 2:30 today. We've got the Twins and the Red Sox. And so we're going to be checking up out of here at 2:30 instead of 3 o'clock. But we still got more show. So you all stick around. Don't go anywhere. More Shaletta Show coming up.